two-pitch swing and a miss. Shut him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, February 24th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. And Chet, spring is officially sprung, as with all the players reporting to Clearwater yesterday, followed by tornadoes throughout the Florida area today. You can tell it's early spring.
Yeah, nasty weather all up and down the East Coast today, Bill. In fact, my area of Jersey right now is under a tornado watch as we speak. So hopefully I won't get blown away during our hour together or get knocked off the air. So let's hope for the best.
All right. Well, hey, we have another special guest making his first Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable visit. 1990 Phillies World Champion Larry Christensen will be joining
1980,
us.
1980.
Yes. And as I really enjoy having former players on the show because they always have so many great stories to tell that the fans just don't get to hear.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that someone who played with guys like Boa, Schmidt, the Bull, Lefty, and the Tugger will have some stories for us.
Well, before we welcome LC to the show, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our trivia question tonight right about 7:29. With our prize being a signed 8x10 color photo of our special guest, Larry Christensen, and former Phillies manager Dallas Green, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer the trivia question. So write this number down if you have it for 7:29 tonight. It'd be 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. And just a hint, the trivia question will be about Larry Christensen. So with that business out of the way, Larry, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Bill, Chet. I appreciate you having me on.
All right. Well, hey, the first thing, when you and I talked a couple weeks ago, you shared a story with me on the phone about how you were traded by the Phillies to the Tigers, and then it never happened. Tell us about the trade that could have changed the face of Phillies history as we know it.
Yeah, and it actually took a on the inside, as far as the two players were Bob Boone and myself, traded to the Detroit Tigers for catcher Bill Freehan and Jim Northrup. So, and all I remember is that Northrup had gray hair, and I was like 20 years old. I think it was the year, I think it was 1974 winter, when Paul the Pope Owens, our general manager, and I think his name was Campbell, the Detroit Tigers GM, and my understanding is there were several social sparklers at about 4 o'clock in the morning. A handshake was as good as something in writing those days, and the story was that the Pope traded Bob Boone and myself for Bill Freehan and Jim Northrup, and at about 4 o'clock in the morning, and when Rulie Carpenter finally aroused Paul Owens and asked him what happened, any deals or anything going on, and he said, well, yeah, we just made a trade. We traded Bob Boone and Christensen for Freehan and Northrup, and Rulie Carpenter said, you're not getting rid of my young farm boys and guys that came out of, we drafted those guys, those are our young future, and call off the trade. And he goes, oh my God, you call off a trade, that was unheard of. So, but eventually Rulie did get his way, thank God, and the trade was called off, and the general manager was certainly a little bit miffed and ticked off, but I was, you know, it finally worked out to where, you know, I did stay with the Phillies my whole career, even though there were several opportunities for me to have been traded. One was also rumored to and confirmed by George Steinbrenner, the Yankees in the mid-70s, and that didn't happen. And then when Seaver was traded to Cincinnati, my name was flying around because I used to beat the Mets all the time, that I was the one going to the Mets for Seaver and whoever else. But it went Pat Zachary went from the Mets to from Cincinnati to the Mets, and Seaver went to Cincinnati. And so I was never traded, even though there were a lot of rumors. And that one that I was traded was called off, and that was, I'm very grateful that didn't happen, because that was the American League, and I really am proud to have pitched and played in a great era of the National League.
Yeah, and LC, as a matter of fact, you ended up, as you said, not being traded and playing your entire career with the Phillies. 11 seasons, 8 full seasons, I guess, and 3 partial seasons. How did that make you feel to stay in one city your whole career?
Well, it was great. And I just actually did an interview for a guy that's writing a book. It was interesting criteria. First of all, I was real proud to have been, stayed with the Phillies and only the Phillies my whole career. I'm second in time behind Mike Schmidt. A guy like Jimmy Rollins might have surpassed both of us if he would not have been traded. And Ryan Howard's coming up on I don't know how much time, and if he's going to stay with the Phillies or is he going to play somewhere else, kind of that question mark. So, I mean, that's kind of the way it goes. But the guy writing the book just said that out of 17,000-some players that have played the game, there were only 700 that fit the criteria of playing at least 10 years with only one team during their career, and there was only 4 of them with the Phillies. It was Mike Schmidt, myself, Terry Harmon with Schmidt with 16, me with 11, Terry with 10, and a pitcher, I forget his name, back in the days, way before us. And the guy wrote a book, and there were only 700 and some players that in the Major League history that fit that criteria, which seemed to be interesting.
Wow, that is interesting. Well, hey, you come out of high school, you're a first-round draft pick, and next year, 19 years old, 1973, you're in the big leagues, and you throw a complete game in your first outing. How in the world was that?
Well, it was kind of a long story from, out of high school, playing only 6 games in the minor leagues, having some back trouble, went to instructional league, then went to spring training, and I was blowing away these big league hitters, and they could not do anything but keep me and bring me north. And after they told me I made the team, I had one more start before I went north to pitch, and start the season as a rookie and the youngest player in the major leagues in 1973. I remember going down to Bradenton, and I'd never been hit in little league, high school, or even in minor league ball or winter league ball or in spring training. I had never been clobbered, but I got clobbered by the Pirates before I left camp, and that didn't feel very good. So my first start, I beat the Mets, lost my shutout in the bottom of the ninth with Cleon Jones, who scored from second base on a wild pitch. Otherwise, I would have joined the ranks of some of the youngest to have pitched a complete game shutout in their major league debut. So I missed that by a passed ball and actually a wild pitch. Don't blame it on Booney. But I was off to a start, and I'll never forget that Richie Ashburn interviewed me that Sunday afternoon. And remember, TV games were only on Sundays because that was when it was light out and they could televise a game. And we didn't have night games, and we didn't have Prism and cable back in those days, not until the later 70s, as I recall. So Richie Ashburn, I remember, interviewed me and asked me, he said, "Young man, you pitched a heck of a game, and what's your goal this year? How many games do you think you can win, you think?" And I said, maybe about 18 or so. I get a lot of starts. So I didn't win any more games that year in the big leagues. I got sent down for some more seasoning with Jim Bunning as the manager in AAA, and I had some work to do to get back. And, lost my confidence. Young guy, but I did have that one thrill for my beginning, and then I had to climb back through some injuries, and then I finally. But I was still a young player at 20, 21, and at 21 I stuck and started winning some games, and then the injuries came, and then that was it was a struggle as still a young guy, but not being able to pitch healthy. you know, with good health was the biggest problem, I would say.
Yeah, that complete game was April of 73 at Veterans Stadium, and then by 75 you were, you know, with the big club pretty much full time, especially, you know, 76 through 79 you were, you know, really solid. Hey, you played for Danny Ozark, LC, for more than half of your career. I had a feeling back then that Phillies fans sometimes questioned whether Danny was the best guy for the job at the time. What was your view of Danny Ozark?
You know, it was very similar to the way people felt about Charlie Manuel starting out with the Phillies, you know, and they didn't accept him. Danny was kind of Danny was a player's manager. He was a great guy. He came out of the Dodger organization, and I think you know, there's proof in the pudding right there. But Danny was a really nice man. I was a young guy. These players are you know, very. It was a difficult era with it was crazy. It was wild. I don't think any manager was going to be able to control these guys on or off the field. But Danny let us play, and it was too bad that Danny ended up you know, getting moved out when it started to really gel, and then we ended up winning a World Series in 1980. I'm really shocked about Danny wasn't around, and had to they moved him on. So, but he was a great guy. He was a great. We all loved playing for Danny, and we had some great teams, and we just had a really tough time. You know, closing the deal in 76, the Reds swept. 77 and 78, the Dodgers. So that was a tough time.
Well, I was going to take you right there, Larry. I wanted to ask you about those teams. You know, you played on some really, really good teams. And as we said, you guys all grew up together with Boa and Schmidt and Leszczynski and Maddox and Boone and all that. But then came along Pete Rose, and I wanted to ask you, as a player on that team and coming up through the rough, you know, great, great teams that couldn't get over the hump, does Pete Rose deserve as much credit from the player standpoint as he does or he's given from the fan standpoint? Was he the guy that got over the hump?
Pete Rose was definitely the guy that was the spark plug for the 1980 team, and if he was not on that team, I'm very doubtful that very doubtful that we may have gone as far as we did, because I don't think our team was as good in 80 as it was in, you know, the 76, 77, and 8 era, you know, those teams there. But Pete was, my gosh, when we got him in the winter of free agency in 78, it was because he was with us in 79 and 80 and got we all let go in 83, but you know, we're in the World Series in 83 also. So Pete was a guy that he helped Mike Schmidt become a better player. I think everybody played a lot harder because Pete always was in the cage taking batting practice. All, you know, came from the Big Red Machine. Getting him in the first place was a real gift, and that was in the days when they were trying to scrounge up an extra $450,000 just to acquire him as a free agent and give him a little bit more. And I still can't believe that the Reds, you know, didn't pay him and wouldn't have kept him no matter what. You know, he belonged to be there forever. So, and as a matter of fact, this year they're retiring his number, even though he's still banned from baseball, which is kind of odd and ironic. But I'm still great friends with Pete, very supportive of Pete. He did make a mistake. He should be in the Hall of Fame. He always said, you know, I'm going to be a unanimous Hall of Famer, and obviously that did not happen and may not happen.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. I was going to ask you about that. I'd love to see him get in while he's, you know, still alive for sure. Hey, speaking of 1980, Larry, you started Game 3 against the Astros in the NLCS, still one of the greatest league championship series we've ever seen. You threw 6 shutout innings. The Phils ultimately lost, though, 1-0 in 11 innings. Then in the deciding 5th game, you came out of the bullpen, didn't fare so well in that 7th inning, but still the Phils were able to win with 5 runs in the 8th, and then they won the game in 10 innings. What do you remember about that time, and how crazy a series was that?
Well, not only was it a crazy series, but yes, I had just pitched and was a starting pitcher and not really a relief pitcher. But, you know, Dallas Green never talked to me about the fact that he thought I would have been a really good relief pitcher because of my control and that I, you know, my arm or injuries, you know, really kept me from throwing, you know, complete games every time out or whatever. But that game, I went down to the bullpen to warm up. And because Ron Reed was already up, he had already been throwing, and Dallas Green walks to the mound, and I'd thrown about six warm-up pitches, and it was at the Astrodome, but I still had that adrenaline flowing, and I was throwing hard, but I hadn't kind of, you know, gotten my pinpoint accuracy going, I don't think, and he motioned for the tall right-hander. Well, who's the tall right-hander? I mean, I'm 6'5", but Ron Reed's 6'8", you know, so or whatever. And so Ron Reed starts to run out to the mound, and he goes, no, I want the other right-hander. And I'm going, oh, boy, you know, not that I was nervous about going into pitch. I wasn't really ready and mentally prepared to where I had thrown all of the pitches I needed. And I remember Terry Poole being the first hitter, who was the hottest guy in the, you know, going in baseball period at that time. And I think he batted like 900, I think, that five game series, which four of those games were extra innings. And the loud noise at that dome went just vibrating right through you. It was so loud standing on that mound. And I remember getting behind, and I had to come in with a pitch, and he got a base hit. And then there was like a wild pitch, and I was, and remember, I'm pitching in Nolan Rhines on the other side. Nolan Rhines lost two games when he's ahead after the seventh or eighth inning or whatever it is, that he's in his career, he's only lost two games. So I ended up coming out of that game after giving up a hit and a run or whatever, and leave a couple men on base, and Ron Reed comes in, and I think it's Art Howe hits a double off the right center field wall, and those runs score, and those are my runs, and we're behind, and I feel like, you know, like knee high to a grasshopper, and I'm not very, and it all happened like in a very very, very, it happened quickly. And so then off that field walks Pete Rose and comes into our dugout. And I'll never forget kind of him looking up at me, and I'm going, oh, boy, you know, he's not too happy about what just happened here. And I'm the goat. So I that really hurt. And I remember that. But, you know, it would have been, you know what, though, really, if you think about it, you remember when Dick Ruthven came in and Rufus and I had, you know, he was with us. He got traded away and came back to us. But his composure for those last two innings were phenomenal. And what he did was to just relax, take a deep breath. And I watched him, and he shut those guys down after we made a couple of terrific comebacks, because Tug got knocked around too, you know, if you recall. So it was an interesting interesting series, and certainly a most memorable one. And then, you know, the World Series too was also interesting, and not one of my best starts, obviously. But I had, I didn't say anything back when. But not only was my arm hanging, but my father's in a hospital in a coma and ready to pass on, and I didn't say. And so there was a lot of things, but it had been also a day game, and Dallas should have known better to ever start me in any day game. I mean, if every game started at 3 o'clock in the morning, I would have been a 40-game winner.
But listen, well, hey, Larry, I wanted to ask you, as you're growing up through the organization, there were some guys around like Jay Johnstone and Richie Hebner and Tug McGraw, some guys that were known to have a little bit of fun in the clubhouse. How crazy was it back behind the closed doors with those guys?
Well, Tug, here's a good story with Tug. And so say I'm the starting pitcher, and I come walking in the locker room, and I go down, and if I have pass up, the pass list is right there in the middle of the room at the table, and I sign the pass list, and I start walking towards my locker down on the left, which and I check the board where the lineup card is, and it's got the lineup that they insert, the plates, and it's got me in, you know, so I confirm that I'm the starting pitcher. There's always a, you know, a brand new ball in your shoe that, okay, there's the warm-up ball. And on the way down, Tug is, I'm my locker was between Tug McGraw and Steve Carlton. And when I'd come walking down that direction, Tug got a good look at me, and he goes, LC, loud enough. He'd say, LC, you pitching tonight? And I go, yes, I am, Tug. And he goes, so am I. So that's how I entered the locker room usually with when I was pitching, and that would be one of Tug's favorites. Richie Hebner was great. He carried like a rubber snake around, and he would throw it over like Dave Bristol's shoulder, and he was scared to death. I mean, he scared the crap out. I mean, it was wild. Boa would be chewing on his fingernails and his bat, and had the chair turned around. He's sitting in his underwear watching everybody walking into that locker room, and he would rip into everything you were wearing, what you said in the paper, except for when Lefty would walk in. I go, oh, Bonesy, how about Lefty? Why don't you say something about Lefty? And he wouldn't say a word because he knew that Lefty would tear his head off if he said anything. So we had a lot of fun, you know. And then when Dick Allen would, you know, this is like 40 years ago, this year that he was our teammate, and we went on to the, it was a controversial year for him, and he was with us in 75 and 76, and he swung that 42-ounce bat, and Dick, you know, would show up at like 7:15, and then he would insert his name into the lineup, and if he got his uniform on in time, he was in the lineup, and he was our cleanup hitter. But so there was a lot of strange stuff went on. Guys smoked cigarettes on the bench. No, there were no cameras, no TVs, and so I mean they all smoked cigarettes. Danny Ozark smoked a cigarette the whole game. He had one cupped in his finger, would take a drag and blow on. So it was a different, you know, guys smoking cigarettes, chewing tobacco, or seeds or whatever. Now, you know, it's there's cameras on everybody, what they're doing, and panning into the dugout, and so they there's a little. It's a little bit different look of what you see now compared to what you would have seen then if they would have been panning into the dugout. So we had a lot of fun when we were winning, because winning is contagious, and that was, you know, it was a great team and a great era those years, you know, in 70s. And winning the World Series and the culmination of all that. And you know, Jay Johnstone going back into the 70s, and Jay was he could hit a fastball. He was a good hitter, and he also loved it in the outfield. He loved to play baseball. Jay's still a friend. I see him once in a while here and there. But what his favorite thing was, not only with us but also with the Dodgers, was he was a good, he could hot foot. So he would crawl under the bench where everybody was sitting. He'd wait and find the perfect person to get, which usually a utility player or a pitcher, and he would take a match, a couple of matches, and put bubble gum and put them up under your shoe, and then light the matches, and he would do the hot foots. He hot footed John Vukovic one time, who went all the way out to the third base line and was just jumping up and down because his foot was on fire. So, I mean, it was, you know, and Jay would get in his costume and run out onto the tarp with all of the, you know, with the rain delays, and he would do his head first slides around the bases. And I mean, it was, you know, it was some nutty stuff that went on. So we had a lot of fun.
Yep. Jay was one of my favorite players. I had the pleasure of meeting him about 5 years ago. What a great guy. Hey, Larry, because of your arm problems, of course, you had to retire by age 30, even though you spent parts of 11 years in the majors with the Phils. You were out of the game, I guess, at age 30. What have you been doing since? I know you were working in the financial industry, and you're also involved in a lot of charity work. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I retired. I was kind of, you know, I was injured and I couldn't play anymore, and I accepted that, and I moved on. The transition, you know, you either, I think the game pushes you out, you know, like watch Jimmy Rollins now signed a contract, which, you know, he wants to play, and he should never give up until he's ready to give up. And so, you know, even Carlton kept pitching in San Francisco, whatever, you get pushed out. Mike Schmidt went out on top. I went out with injuries. So there's like three different ways you can go out. And I went out with a bad just bad everything. But my elbow, I had 5 elbow reconstructive surgeries and 27 bone chips and spurs, and I tried to make a comeback, but it just my arm get worse and worse. So I ended up not knowing what to do, but I ended up getting into finance, and I have been in the business now 30 years, and so the last 12 I have had my own marketing firm, and I work with investment management firms only on the institutional side. I don't do wrap retail or high net worth individuals. I sell institutional investment services mainly to pension funds and large pools of assets. So it's been a great 30-year growth and career. My second career, I'm very proud of. I've worked hard. McCarver and I were actually talking last night, and Timmy worked hard in his career. I know Gary Maddox has done really great, but the thing is that when I got into the business, I stuck with it and made it work, and that's the greatest advice I can give to any young player that is going to have to start another career and do something else in his life is, whatever you do, give it your best and stick with it and make it work, and everything always evolves. But you hate to see guys that flounder around after the game, and not that it wasn't easy, but I just stuck with it. So that's what I do. Thanks for asking. I have what I have mainly because of, a little bit about from baseball and the money that I made there, because I invested well when I was young. But I also have this business is what has really carried me and made me comfortable and financially sound.
Well, Larry, one other baseball question I had for you. When you talk to baseball fans, and as we introduced you tonight, you are Larry Christensen, 1980 Phillies World Champion. How would Phillies Wall of Fame member sound as you're a nominee for the second time coming up?
Well, I think I've been nominated. I'm on the list, but I don't think that's going to – I'm waiting for them to open up the Hall of Shame. Then I'm going to probably be the first one on there. But no, you know what? They've got players that have had. I mean, it's very nice of you to say and everything, but it would certainly be an honor. But I expect that they've got a lot of people ahead of me that they also are, the personalities they really want to see up there. And I like all of the people that they've had up there. And I loved doing, when Darren Dalton and Pat Burrell, and I remember the days of the Carltons and the Schmidt. And I was part of those ceremonies when they all started, and it was a real gift. It's just a gift to be an alumni from a great organization and played my whole career. And I think the Phillies have just been I'm a client. I'm a season ticket holder. I have a lot of clients out to games and things, but I just really, the organization has, I provided an opportunity that not too many young people get. And I am grateful for that. As far as the Wall of Fame, I think there's a lot of people ahead of me, and they'll be if I'm up there, they may be, really scratching for somebody to put up there. So
give yourself more credit than that, my friend. Well, hey, LC, we're about running out of time with you, so we wanted to see if we could get you to work with us. We have a new segment we put in last week, and we call it the Fast Five. A couple quick questions that Chet answers or asks. Are you up for that real quick?
Yeah, sure.
All right, Larry, here we go. 5 easy ones, 5 quick ones for you. We'll assume baseball is still number one. What is your second favorite sport to watch?
Football.
Good answer. What hitter or hitters gave you the most trouble?
Al Oliver.
He gave a lot
double
of guys trouble.
Left center field, double off the left center field wall every time up.
Good hitter.
Other than the money, what is the biggest difference from Major League Baseball of 1976 versus today?
The corporate, more of a corporate entity and business instead of you know, family oriented. I mean, if you want a quick answer, it's more of just it's turned more corporate. It's a business, just like football has become a business. But remember, mm-hmm. things evolve and change over time. There's been a great growth in the game of baseball. I think it's wonderful, but it's the sad thing is that people go to see players, and now they think of them as how much money they make, not how good they are or how hard yeah. they play. It's how much money do they make. So that's kind of my answer.
Hey, we know Steve Carlton wasn't a big fan of the media and that he's a wine connoisseur. Tell us something else about Lefty we might not know.
He knows where they land. I'll leave it at that.
All right.
We're very close friends. Lefty had a reason for not talking to the media. They burnt him, and he made a vow to never talk to the press because of what happened to him. And I don't blame him. And I was actually with him when it happened. So I know what happened. I know when it happened. I know why it happened. And I know why he didn't talk to the press and did not. But he stayed the course. But look at how he did. He excelled and went on to win like three more Cy Young Awards after that happened.
Yep. Right. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to meet Lefty several times, and heck of a nice guy.
Yep.
Yep, he is.
He is now.
And finally, number five.
Nice.
Yeah,
okay, number five.
Sure. What is your favorite baseball movie?
It has to be, Field of Dreams, I think, is great. I love it. Field of Dreams. Kevin
Can't go wrong with that one.
Yeah.
All right, LC, thanks for playing Fast Five.
All right, LC. Well, I think we took up all of our time plus a couple extra minutes, and we certainly enjoyed having you. Great to talk to you. I could do this for a couple hours. Be great with me. We could just keep on talking.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to rehash and good times. All right, guys. Thanks, Bill and Chad.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
All right, Chad. Well, hey, it's trivia time, and as we mentioned, our prize is going to be the signed 8x10 color photo of our special guest, Larry Christensen, and former Phillies manager, Dallas Green, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. And I can tell you, Chad, the answer, there are two answers to this question, and both have already been said on this show, so you don't even have to Google if you were paying attention. So here we go. Larry Christensen made his major league debut as a 19-year-old on April 13, 1973, winning 7-1, throwing a complete game. Two answers we're looking for. What team did LC beat in his debut, and where was the game played? Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. All right, Chad, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Hey, Chad, as I said before, and I'll say it again, when we get these former players on, I could just talk to them for hours and hours, and I had a whole list of questions and didn't even get halfway through them. I could talk to him forever.
No, me too. I mean, there were so many more questions we could have asked about Jay Johnstone, about Tug McGraw, about playing for Dallas Green. We have to have him on again.
Yep, you bet. And, you know, and the other thing that I hadn't thought about before the show as I was getting ready, but as we were talking, I was thinking, you know, if you look at the players, the Schmitz, the Carlton, Rose, Morgan, and Perez at the end of his career, the Hall of Famers that he came across in the locker room, along with just guys that he played against. I mean, what a great era of baseball to be playing, and fantastic. I could just keep on talking about this stuff.
Yep, I'm with you.
All right, well, hey, Chet, last week at this time, we were talking about a big game taking place up on North Broad Street where the number one ranked Villanova Wildcats took on the Temple Owls, and Villanova
took it to Temple and beat them pretty easily. But tonight, as we speak, they have a bigger challenge on the road at number 5 Xavier, who Villanova beat by 31 points early in the year, and Nova is actually a one-point underdog on the road tonight.
Yeah, not surprising, I guess, in that the Musketeers are tough at home. They've only lost once there this season. But on the other hand, Nova did rout Xavier and Philly back on New Year's Eve, as you said, 31-point win by the Wildcats. I do expect a close game tonight for sure. It's a true test for Jay Wright's guys. And one other thing, you mentioned the Villanova-Temple game last week. I want to take back what I said about Temple almost certainly being in the big dance. They lost by 16 a week ago in that home game against Nova. Disappointing to me. I thought they'd give them a better battle. And then Tulsa ran away from them for a 19-point win last night. So Temple is now 17-10 and might not, or might need, rather, a deep conference tournament run to get into the big dance for sure. So that's something that we're going to have to keep a watch on.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked about St. Joe's, too. Last week they had that game against Dayton. They beat Dayton up on Hawk Hill and then turned around and lost themselves over the weekend.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, it's wide open, and these guys need to win these games if they're going to get to the dance.
You got that right, Bill.
All right. Well, hey, you know, we've been talking Flyers in inconsistencies, it seems like, every week since the season started almost, and you know, they really needed a win last night in Carolina. They came up short again. And, you know, the trade deadline is looming February 29th, which is next Monday. And, you know, I've scoured the newspapers, internets, looking for trade rumors, anything I could find about the Flyers. And there hasn't been anything out there to speak of. And I guess Ron Hextall said today that he's not planning on being a buyer. So, have you decided if you're going to be a buyer or seller, and if you got any wild predictions that you might want to make to go along with my Steve Mason move? I have one other one I'm going to toss out, even
All
though
right.
it's not a blockbuster, but you first.
Yeah, I agree with what Hextall said today, that we're not going to add players. We're not going to be buyers, essentially. I don't blame him. The Flyers are, again, 5 points out of the final wild card spot. They just can't seem to put a streak together. Big loss Tuesday night against Carolina, as you said, on a night that the Hurricanes, of course, won, since that's what they were playing, and the two other teams right there with these guys also won. So the Flyers not only failed to gain ground, they actually lost a little ground on these other teams. Very frustrating. And now they have a couple of more games coming up against teams not currently in the playoff picture. Minnesota and Arizona must win games, in my opinion. I think Hextall knows that even if they were to somehow sneak into the playoffs, they're not going to do any real damage. So don't give up any of the young talent. You got a lot of guys down in the minors at Lehigh. You know, don't mess with that. I think they're in pretty good shape for the long haul over the next few years. So, you know, don't give away some of these young guys to take a shot at some guy who may help you win a round or two this year. Don't do it. I like what Hextall did and what he said today.
Yeah, well, you know, the guys I wonder about, this isn't my trade, but I just want to hit on this, is, you know, I wonder about guys like Braden Schenn. I think Braden Schenn's had a pretty nice year. I believe he's got like 18 mm-hmm. goals, and he could probably bring something. You know, Matt Reed is another guy, you know, he's kind of in the middle. Is he a guy you're going to win a Stanley Cup with? Or can you get anything for him if you tried to package him up? So I think they have some guys that are in the middle there, and I don't see them certainly moving any of their big guys. So I think they're kind of in a little bit of a roster quandary in my mind with them guys. But my trade, and this is only to make my man Carl Henderson happy, because Sam Morin is going to get the call here soon, and I believe the Delzato being out for the season injury may affect this, but I think Medvedev is going to go, and Sam Morin is going to be a Flyer come Tuesday or Monday. That's my trade.
I'd
not
okay
a blockbuster, but it's time to make time to let the young guy come up. And then, you know, Medvedev has not played as well as they really expected him to, and they may be able to get a third round pick or something for him. But I don't think that's near as important as they dumped the – I believe he got about a $3 million salary. They dumped the salary. They bring up the kid, get the kid some playing time, and he's got a chance to be a pretty good player. Let's get on with it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I mean, it certainly worked out okay for Gostis there when they brought him up. So, you know, why not? Let's get some experience for these young guys and see what they have to offer.
You bet. Well, hey, I have an easy question for you, and switching gears just a little bit. What do you get when you take a team with the lowest points per game average in the conference and the highest points per game allowed on average in the conference after 56 games?
I'm guessing you get your town, your team, your 76ers.
You got them. All 8-48 in dead last. And you know what? If you don't score as many points as anybody else and you give up more than everybody else, you're going to probably lose 48 of your 56 games. There's 26 games left, Chet. I mean, how many more is this bunch going to win?
Well, D. Lynam on our show last week predicted they would finish with 12 wins. I'm going to be a tad more optimistic and say 14. Now, that means they would have to go 6-20 the rest of the way, which doesn't sound overly impressive, but it would be, of course, a better pace than they've been on so far this year. So I'm an optimist. I'm going to say 6-20, and we'll see if I'm wrong.
Well, I think you're wrong, and I think that D is optimistic at 4. I'm going to say no more than 3. If they win 11 games, I'm going to be mighty surprised, because when you just look at what's going on there, I just don't see who they're capable of beating.
Wow. Okay, mark that down. You say 11, I said 14.
Yeah, and D said 12, and obviously D knows more than us, but we'll see. We'll see. I just don't see. And you know, of course, we'll have a lot to talk about come NBA draft time. But hey, speaking of drafts, you know, the college football combine started. The Eagles draft situation is going to be interesting, depending on what they do at quarterback here. But they've been making a lot of signings, bringing back a lot of the defensive side of the ball guys. Getting them locked in. They cut D'Amico Ryans loose today, which really isn't a surprise to me. But I don't see anything that they've done as being like major stuff. But how do you like the moves that they've made so far?
I like them. They locked up a lot of key guys, I guess 6 of them at this point. I still think Fletcher Cox is going to get a deal soon. Nolan Carroll they're talking with, apparently. A little concerned they haven't done anything with Walter Thurman. I thought he had a good season. I read something today that apparently he's not a great tackler, and that could be a concern. But I think they're doing all the right things. It shows, you know, some stability in the front office. It's actually making Howie Roseman look pretty good at this point, which is, I guess, a good thing for him. And now we're hearing, you know, that Bradford may be back, at least in the minds of a lot of people. He's running out of options, apparently, because it looks like San Francisco is going to keep Kaepernick around. So I think so far so good for this offseason for the Eagles.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I'm okay with the guys that they've brought back. I don't, like I said, I don't think there was a whole lot of mystery to most of these guys. I would like to see them bring Darren Sproles back. I just think he's too valuable in too many areas to cut loose. If they, you know, you can't pay him the world as he's a little bit older, but he certainly can be a help. And, you know, the Bradford thing is still the key piece to the puzzle, because with him or without him decides how you're going to do a lot of other things. So, but, you know, defensively, it looks like they're trying to get some guys in. And it looks like, to me, by the way they're doing things, is that they think these guys can play and that they weren't in the right situation or right system to play. So I'm sure they've evaluated all the film, all the talent, and they like these guys bringing them back. Now, with that said, you mentioned Carroll, you mentioned Thurman. You know, I was never thrilled with those guys when they brought them in, because they were somewhat career backups when they brought them in, and they brought them in here to start. But if you don't have guys like that, you got to replace them with somebody, unless you're going to go with the kids you have with, you know, Rowe and Watkins and them guys and make them starters. So it'll be interesting to see. And the other one, of course, is Jason Peters. What's going to happen with Jason Peters at this time?
Yeah, we shall see. I still think he's going to come back for another year. They're going to hope that, you know, this offseason he can get healthy once again, because he missed a few games and was hurt in a lot of the games. So hopefully I think they're going to stick with him for one more year, because they could certainly use him on at left tackle, because they don't have a whole lot of talent on that O-line right now. They got to beef that up. They're going to draft at least two offensive linemen, I think. So if they can get another year out of Peters, I think that'd be great. And, of course, D'Amico Ryan's got let go today. Not a surprise as far as one of the linebackers. Not a surprise at all. I'm gonna say that they will draft at least two offensive linemen and another quarterback at some point, even if Bradford is still around.
I'm with you. Well, hey, I had one more topic for you this week, partner, and I wanted to throw this out. As I was thinking about the show and getting my thoughts together, I got thinking about Shane Gostisbehere, Jahlil Okafor, Mikhail Franco, and Jordan Hicks, you know, and one for each sport here. And there's certainly other guys you could throw in there, Aaron Nolan, Nerlens Noel, but, you know, does the city have – can these four guys be the all-stars in their respective leagues for a long time to be – you know, we can't put them in the names of the Hall of Famers like Mike Schmidt, Bobby Clark, and Julius Erving and them kind of guys. But, you know, are these – at least not yet – are these the kind of guys that can return this city to the glory days, to the great things?
Well, I think they're all potential all-stars, I'll say that. So yes to all four in that aspect, although with Sam Hinkie still the GM of the Sixers, who knows if Okafor is going to get the chance to stick around long enough to make that happen. I do like all four of the guys you mentioned, however, so hopefully they will all be here for the better days ahead that I think all four teams should have moving forward. We know what Gostisbehere brings to the table already. He has been so impressive. Okafor, I think, still has a lot of upside if – you know, he has the right guys around him. We saw a lot from Franco this past year, a lot of talent right there. He's got a lot of time still to develop. And Jordan Hicks, I mean, we only saw 8 games worth, but clearly he was a big force as a rookie on that Eagles defense. So, yeah, 4 great guys, and those are 4 that you picked out, and good choices for the 4 teams.
Well, and like I say, there's some others that certainly could be on that list. That, you know, if you could take a Mikhail Franco and make him a star, and then again, we can't compare him to Mike Schmidt, but in that kind of player, and then turning Aaron Nola into a Steve Carlton, all of a sudden, you know, you're starting to build dynasty stuff again.
Yes, indeed. Hey, let me repeat that trivia question again, because I'm surprised we haven't had a winner yet. In case you're just joining us, the question was, Larry Christensen, the former Phil, made his major league debut as a 19-year-old in April of 1973. He threw a complete game, beating somebody 7-1. Who did LC beat in his debut, and where was the game played? So, if you know the answer, give us a call at 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855.
And, you know, interestingly enough, Chet, on that, LC said who it was against, and you keenly slid in where the game was played. Very, very nice touch.
I did. That's right.
Yes,
trying to help
did.
People out.
You bet. We want to give this thing away. Well, hey, Chet, we talk about Carl's Cards, you know, and every week we go through the signings, and I'm telling you what, Chet, it just keeps getting better and better. Carl has added some more guests, and check this out. As we've been telling you, he's holding a private signing with Phillies Whiz Kids pitcher Kurt Simmons on March the 4th. The newest Flyer Hall of Famer Jimmy Watson will be in the store on March the 5th. Couple new signees, former Flyers Ray Allison and Terry Karkner in the store on April the 2nd. And as we mentioned, Jordan Hicks. Jordan Hicks will be in the store on April the 9th. And then check this one out. Carl's added this new signer to the list. Flyers first captain Lou Angotti will be in the store on April 16th. That's going way back, Chet.
Yeah, we're old enough to remember Lou, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Yep.
One of my all-time favorites, Monsignor Bonner graduate and Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti will be in the store on April 23rd. And check out the last two, NHL Hall of Famer Mark Howell and his brother Marty will be in the store May 21st. And a Father's Day treat, B-Doc, Brian Dawkins, will be in the store on Saturday, June 19th. What a lineup Carl's got put together. And I'm telling you, Chet, when he gets down here for spring training, there's going to be more. This list is going to get bigger. So stop by at Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road, Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. And you can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. Jet, how are you spreading out your funds
along this list?
You know, after hearing that lineup of signings, I think I'm going to have to ask my wife for a bigger discretionary spending allowance.
Absolutely. And Carl does a great job of pricing these guys where they are very affordable. And he always does that. And but boy, he's got some guys. There's a few guys on this list that certainly need to become part of the press box collection.
Yeah, Mark Howell for me is the one that stands out there. I'm gonna try to get there for Mark Howell for sure, and Capital Levy.
Yep. But both of them and Brian Dawkins is gonna, you know, it's gonna sell the house out. It's going to be a great signing. And Lou Angotti, I mean, that's a cool piece of Flyers history and Philly sports history right there. Good stuff.
So exactly.
Jimmy Watts at the Hall of Famer. Yep. I mean, it just keeps on going.
Yeah. Way to go, Carl.
All right. And, hey, one other signing announcement for the Notre Dame fans out there. My buddy Chip Brady at Collector's Clubhouse in the North Hanover Mall in Hanover, Pennsylvania, will have legendary Notre Dame Fighting Irish coach Lou Holtz in his store Saturday, March the 26th from 2 to 4. They will also be doing mail order for those that can't make it out to Hanover. So contact Chip Brady at BradyChip13@yahoo.com or give him a call at 717-968-6243 for details. Well, Chet, we are a little ahead of schedule tonight, which is not a bad thing. So a parting shot for you.
All right, Bill, the Daytona 500 was last weekend. Now, as usual, I didn't watch it. I saw the highlights, the photo finish that showed Denny Hamlin won by a hundredth of a second. I suppose that was an exciting finish. And I know NASCAR still has plenty of diehard fans, and not all of them are rednecks from the South, I know that. I'm not going to say anything disparaging about any of those racing fans, in fact. But for me personally, it's just not my thing. Fans, like my pal Denny, will insist there's lots to watch for in a race and that there is plenty of strategy involved. But no matter how much I try, I just can't get into it. And for me, that strategy comes down to this. Drive real fast and try not to crash.
Well, I tell you what, Chet, me and Denny would get along great because I like NASCAR. And I was never a real fan myself until I went to my first race, which was sometime around 1984-3, when Cale Yarborough won the World 600 at Charlotte Motor Speedway. And I've been to Daytona for the 500. I've been to the Firecracker 400 at Daytona. I've been to Pocono. I've been to Dover. So I've hit a few along the way. It's not a priority, and I don't enjoy it near as much now that I can't root for the Intimidator, who was my favorite, Dale Earnhardt. Got to meet Dale and got some autographs from him back in the day, and what a super nice guy. So I, too, am a NASCAR fan. It is not my top priority on Sunday afternoon, but I do watch the big races, and I enjoy the super speedway, and there is certainly strategy. So Joe Gibbs, who owns the Denny Hamlin car that won that Daytona 500, says that the strategy in NASCAR is every bit, if not greater, than the strategy to win a Super Bowl. And Joe Gibbs has won, I believe, 4 NASCAR championships. So,
wow.
Good sport, actually. If you ever go, you definitely have a lot better bug than watching them run around in circles on a TV.
Well, that's what my buddy says. If you go to see it, you definitely get into it more so. Just, you know, being there with the excitement of it. And I'm sure it is a lot of fun. But, again, just not one of my priorities.
Well, and I will tell you, whatever them fans were you called them, they like to have a good time at those races.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've heard that.
Yeah, that's right. All right, Chet. Well, I have no parting shot today. So, we are through. We can close it out unless you have anything else you'd like to add tonight.
Well, I'm starting to plan for my trip to Florida next week. I'll be in Clearwater, as you know, on March 4th, and then I'm going to see you down in Florida on Saturday, March 5th somewhere. I hope you marked your calendar, and you picked out a place for brunch or something for me.
I got it covered. I got it covered. And
all right.
I will be – two games that I know I will be – I will be at Bright House Field to see the Phils and the Rays on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 16th. And
I believe Mr. Henderson and his wife will be there, and Danny Bevins will be there as well. So looking forward to that. And also on the 21st, the Phils roll over here to Lakeland to play the Detroit Tigers right down the street from my house. So I will certainly be in attendance for that. Can't wait for spring training. Always a great time.
Yep, looking forward to it. And, hey, one other quick thing we didn't really address, the Ryan Howard situation. You know, he feels he was kind of dissed by the media last year, not treated fairly. What do you make of all this? Is he just being, you know, a disgruntled guy who's, you know, maybe lost all his old teammates and he's looking for a way out of there too? Or does he have a point? You know, was the media overly hard on him last year?
Well, good point. I'm glad you brought that up because I actually meant to have that on our list of things to talk about tonight, and it slipped my mind. You know,
there you go.
I feel like Ryan Howard, I don't know that he deserves a free pass. Nobody deserves a free pass when you're struggling for maybe your second or third straight year. But people seem to forget that without Ryan Howard, setting power numbers like never have been seen before in this town, including Mike Schmidt, there is no greatest era of Philly baseball without Ryan Howard. And, you know, I don't, like I say, Pat Burrell got a little bit of a free pass from the fans, but Ryan Howard can't seem to get anything from him. And I just feel like he certainly does not need to be penalized because he signed a long-term contract when he was healthy. And the team doesn't need to be penalized either because they did the right thing at the time that they did sign him to that contract. So injuries are what they are. As for Howard, I wish he would have a good year. And in turn, if the Phils decided to cut him loose, I'd be okay with that too. You know, I just don't want to see him struggle and be at the mercy of the fan base and the media again this year.
Yep. I'm with you. I mean, even if it's a platoon situation and he's hitting only right-handers, he can still do some damage. His power numbers weren't terrible last year. The batting average, not great. The slugging percentage, not great. The strikeouts, still way higher than we'd like to see. But, yeah, people forget the numbers that he put up from 2005 to 2011. Pretty amazing. I mean, he's second all-time on the Phils home run list. He's been there a long time. And as you said, without him, they don't win the 2008 series. Yeah, he's had some down years ever since the injury at the end of, I guess, the 11 season. But I still think the guy tries. I think he's doing his best. I don't think he's, you know, a slacker or just going through the motions. And you know, I agree with you. Chase Sutley would always get the benefit of the doubt. Ryan Howard just doesn't seem to have that with the fans. I don't know what it is, but, boy, I would love to see him have a nice, great probable final year as a Philly. That would be so nice to see him belt, you know, 35 homers or whatever.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, I would even be happy if he put up 25, 28, and 95 and hit 250. I mean, to me, that'd be good. That'd be a good parting shot for him.
Yeah, I'd like to see it.
All right. Well, Chet, now we're at the top of the hour, so let's thank our special guest, LC Larry Christensen, for joining us, Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continued support of the show, Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. So, Chet, we're going to be back next week. We're going to try to work out a Clearwater guest if we can, but it's still in the mix. So but we'll keep working on that. We're scheduled for next Wednesday, March the 2nd. So for Jim Chetchesco and Bill Furman, join us again next week. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
Gene Hart, good night, good hockey.